Thank you. Hi, once again, my name is Michael Brandstetter from UC Davis. And I'd first like to just acknowledge my collaborators, Manuel Solis from INBIO in Costa Rica and Jack Longino from the Evergreen State College. And also I'd like to thank my funding source, the Organization for Tropical Studies, which provides great grants for kind of beginning projects. And what I'd like to describe to you today is a kind of a really interesting natural history story about defensive behaviors in two neotropical ants, the Cappadocian ants.
And they're relatively large, which makes brain studies relatively easier to do than you can imagine for a Drosophila. They have very distinctive clear behavior, so in their foraging behaviors they have that characteristic sit and wait, prey, you know, praying pose, and they have a very quick strike, and so it's very easy to score their behaviors. And they're very relatively long-lived insects, and so from first instar to about 8 or 9, depending on the species and the sex of the insect, they can live for over a year in a lab. And so that makes my question, learning memory across development, this is a really good insect to study. So I'm using this, I began by using this milkweed bug protocol, and so the handful of papers that have looked at learning memory in mantises have used this. So milkweed bugs are sea predators, and when they feed off the seeds of milkweed bugs, milkweed contains these cardenoloids, the bugs then uptake them and contain the cardenoloids themselves, and they're a noxious prey item. And so what I did is you can raise these milkweed bugs on the milkweed seeds, so then they're a noxious prey item, or you can raise them on sunflower seeds, and sunflower seeds, you know, anybody who eats them at a ball game knows they taste good, the bug's going to taste just fine to the mantis. So I feed to the mantis and I record whether or not they strike at the prey item, handling time, which I define as time from strike to either completely eating the prey item or rejecting it, grooming times, and vomiting behaviors. When you feed them these noxious bugs, they actually do have kind of regurgitating behavior where they rub their mouth parts and you see this kind of orange goo come out. And I give them one experience a day and I track them for 5 days. So this is the results I got with third instar mantises. And so this is how all of my data is going to be presented. Along the x-axis is my trial, and then the y is that handling time that I talked to you about. So from strike to either rejecting or eating the prey time, or completely eating the prey item. And so what you can see, there's a decrease in handling time from day one to day two, but there isn't any continual decrease. And so if the mantis is learning to avoid feeding on this prey, you'd imagine it would either stop striking the prey item or learn to more quickly reject the prey item. And I'm not seeing this. There's no significant difference. And then also between the control and the aversive prey items, I'm not seeing consistent differences. And these are obviously very large standard errors. These are all means with their standard error. So we began to wonder, are young mantises not learning, or did the milkweed bugs introduce too much variation? I mean, this is a system that's been used over and over again, but there is a lot of variability. So the level of toxin in the seed, I was using Asclepias syriaca, which is a highly toxic milkweed plant, but you know, it can vary from seed to seed, the amount of toxin ingested and sequestered by the bug, the size of the bug, and then the behavior of the bug during the trial. I mean, this is another live insect. I can't really control what it does during the trial. So we developed this kind of artificial diet. So we have artificial diet that the mantis, as you can see, loves. It'll just chew on this and eat it until it's pretty much all gone. And if I roll it in salt, then that's not going to be a very good prey item, and that becomes my aversive prey. So I can tie it to this little ball of artificial diet to a string and run it up a ramp, and these mantises sit very beautifully at the top of the ramp and will attack that prey item as it comes to them. And so now we have a training protocol that controls for levels of toxicity. It's very easy for me to control the size of this prey, and the movement of the prey is all controlled. So using 6 instars, I saw that 6 instar mantises were learning to avoid eating, to more quickly reject this salty prey. And so from day 1 to day 5, there was a significant decrease in handling time, so time to eating it, to spitting it out. So they were all still striking at it, but they were remembering and more quickly rejecting the salty prey item. Whereas control diet, they just ate it just fine. It was, you know, a fine meal for them. So then I went back to a younger instar. So 3rds were pretty young. 6 are getting close to an adult stage. So I went to 4th instars, which are about medium through development, halfway through development. And what I saw was that I wasn't seeing any, it did not appear that my 4th instars were learning. So I'm not getting any significant decrease in handling time from day 1 to day 5. It's kind of, there's some decrease, but it's not consistent and it's not continuing, which was surprising because you would imagine that 4th instars should also be able to learn. So just to summarize the behavioral data, using the milkweed bugs, I didn't see learning in 3rd instars. So we developed this artificial diet protocol, and I saw learning in 6, but not in the 4th. So what's going on here? Obviously, let's see what happens in 5th. I need to increase all my sample sizes, the R pilot studies. I really want to get the question, is learning time dependent, as in a 15-day-old mantis versus a 30-day-old mantis, or is it something to do with molting? And so when an insect molts, it's not just losing the exoskeleton, there's a lot of internal changes that are happening. And also happening to the brain. So my question is, does learning ability somehow correspond to the brain development? And in particular, part of the mushroom insect brain I'm interested in is called the mushroom body. So it's been shown to be important for olfactory learning memory. It also receives input from gustatory and visual systems. Morphology reflects feeding ecology, so beetle species that are generalists have one part of the mushroom body is more complex than beetle species that are specialists, so generalists have more complex structure in their mushroom body. Experience can cause volume changes in the brain, so wasps that are foragers and are leaving the nest have a more have a larger volume in a specific region of the mushroom body than the wasps that are inside the nest and are nurse wasps, and that's been age control, so it is the experience that's influencing that change. So nobody's looked at mantis mushroom bodies before. My histology is still very rough, but we can see what we're looking for. So this is that mushroom body structure. They kind of look like mushrooms, I guess is why they're called mushroom bodies. And that calyx area is the area that has been shown to be different for generalist versus specialist insects, and that can change with volume. And so what I want to do is, you know, clean up my histology a little bit. I want to look from first instar all the way to adult, see if I can see any correlation between brain development, and particularly in these mushroom bodies, and learning ability, and then just really get a basic idea of what these structures look like throughout development. So later on with my project, another project I'm doing is looking at the role of environment through development on brain morphology, and so that way I know what they look like and I can see what changes are happening. So again, my overall interest is neuronal basis of behavior. Talked briefly about these huge ideas in a very small way. Another experiment that I would love to talk to people about here is the role in environment experience and learning in the brain. So a lot of people have done, you know, rats in sensory enriched or sensory deprived environments, and so I'm interested in doing this with insects and doing that across the lifetime. And then I'm also interested in olfaction in insects. And so cockroaches or sister taxa is a highly olfactory insect. We know that they crawl around your house waving their antennae. But people think of mantis as highly visual insects because of their big eyes. But I think they're doing a lot more with their antenna than anybody's looked at before. And so what's interesting is that some of these ideas are clearly related, some of them may not seem so clearly related, but we can actually learn really interesting things by studying the overlap of these projects and learn new things such as the evolutionary divergence of mantis and cockroaches through the overlap of all of these ideas. So I only have 2 more years, probably won't get through it all, but we'll see. Or 3 more years, and just some acknowledgments and some funding. Yeah, so actually one idea that actually didn't get on the big diagram at the end is color vision in mantids. So, you know, the idea that all these prey items, usually unpalatable prey, are bright, aposematically colored. But nobody knows if mantids have true color vision. And so there's been some evidence that thinks they might be using more of a contrasting idea, like how do the animals contrast with their background. So what I'd love to do is take my artificial dye all kinds of different colors, and to see if they learn, can they learn colors by using my behavioral artificial dye, because nobody knows. And it'd be really interesting. I mean, they have these huge binocular eyes, but there's some thought that, you know, there may be a sacrifice for binocular vision and being able to estimate distances with, you know, color vision. And so nobody knows with them if they can see colors. Yeah. Oh.
Mm-hmm. How do you differentiate lack of learning from having very short memory?
So the question is, how do you differentiate lack of learning from quit forgetting? And so there's actually a lot of research that looks at the difference between long-term memory and short-term memory. And so you can look at forgetting rates as well as, I'm trying to think of a quick way to answer this. It's a good question, it's a big question. So short-term memory, I would expect, or short-term learning can be something that I can test, and then I would see a response that would fall off quickly. And so, you know, I can get learning and then track them on different time scales, and I can look within 40 minutes, or I can look within hours, or I can look with weeks, or, you know, even months, people have done with crickets. And so, you know, I guess the question is, it's just the scale that you do your experiment on, and you can see the decrease in the learning. I don't know if I answered that one. No, because I'm still kind of in the early stages, but that's something I would like to get to, definitely.
What about the size of the artificial, or the size of the brain? Is that another thing you could vary in terms of, especially with this question, with
Yeah, definitely. Like, if it's even more of an, like, if it's a stronger stimulus and even more aversive, or they'll be stronger or weaker learning. I mean, that's the thing that I like about this, is I've kind of just got it going now, and so now I can ask all kinds of really interesting questions using the artificial diet.
The olives are going to be used for olive oil. It's a little bit different. There's a little bit more tolerance, but obviously something like this would definitely not be accepted for olive oil either. There are different kinds of controls that that could be used. The most widespread one and mostly used is the insecticides. There are some people looking at parasitoids against this pest. There have been a lot of studies on mass trapping, but the results of those studies are not really promising as a technique for management. And finally, there's cultural control. One possibility is tillage, because they pupate it in the soil. And the other one, it's much more expensive, but it's actually one of the most efficient ones, and that is sanitation. So if you do not harvest the olives, or if there are olives left on the trees after harvest, you would pull them down and either bury them, burn them, or do something with them, just get rid of them. The other thing I'm going to talk to you about is the biology of the fly.